Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the program. This is Trucking with Authority. This is the show to help you on your journey to build a better trucking business. For the next hour, consider me your navigator on that journey. I'm your host, Kenny Long. I'll be taking your calls about anything related to trucking, from getting started as a driver all the way up to pulling your first load under your own DOT number. We can talk about everything from filing with the FMCSA, the insurance requirements, dealing with brokers, load boards, sales and negotiation, marketing, factoring, and anything else that you might find necessary in your day-to-day operations running a trucking business. Go ahead and press 1 at any time. That'll get you in the queue if you have any questions or comments along the way. Start out by saying thank you to everyone that has stuck with me all this time. Today is September 8, 2015. Our first episode of Trucking with Authority was September 9, 2014, so it has been one full year. So thank you again to everyone that stuck with me all this time. Thank you to the Let's Truck team, Kevin and Lisa Rutherford, for giving me the opportunity. I appreciate all the support, and that is the topic tonight. Back and forth, year in review, and looking forward to the future. It's been a year, and we've covered a lot of topics. The industry has gone through some huge changes from where we were just 1 year ago. I'd love to talk a little bit about the changes that have happened that brought us to here, just with the freight market and the negotiation tactics and the way things have changed and the availability and possible reason why you might decide to get your own authority or maybe not to get your own authority. I can tell you we are at a pivot point with some of the regulations right now. If any of you happen to catch Rico's show with guest host Attorney Hank Seaton just 2 weeks ago, they talked about FMCSA's new regulations, the Unified Registration System, which is going into effect October 23rd of this year. So we're just a little more than a month out from that. I've been talking a little bit about that, just touching on it briefly, since I started this show 1 year ago. And here we are, faced with it right next month. So if you have any questions or comments about that, we will get to those first. You will be at the top of the list. We've already got a lot of calls on the line. We've already got a lot of callers in the queue. Again, if you have any questions or comments, go ahead and press 1, and we will get you on the air. We would love to hear from you. So, a year down, we've covered everything from getting started. In fact, my very first show was about filling out the forms, just the online step-by-step process of getting your DOT number and your MC number. That still applies for a little more than a month. October 23rd, we can take the past year's worth of shows, anytime I talked about registration with the FMCSA, and we can throw that out the window because it does not apply anymore. Now, some of it is overlapping. And it's a relatively simple system in theory, but this is a government organization we're talking about. So take all that with a grain of salt. Now, I've said since the beginning that FMCSA is the one government agency that they seem to have got right. Overall, getting your authority and starting a trucking company has been fairly simple. It's, you know, there's a few complications in there, but overall, it's a fairly simple process. I hope, and I have my fingers crossed, that after October 23rd, it will remain a simple process. But that remains to be seen. So what I'm talking about is the Unified Registration System, which applies to just about every segment of the industry. Now, up to this date, the only thing that mattered was if you were going to be a motor carrier, a broker, or a freight forwarder, you had to register with FMCSA and get an MC number. Carriers that engaged in interstate commerce that drove trucks under 10,000 pounds, if you were a hot shot or maybe a sprinter van, and you were under that 10,000-pound threshold, did not need an MC number, but you did need a DOT number. And then in some cases, there are companies that have DOT numbers that might be engaged in intrastate, only within a state, that never needed an MC number. The problem with that is now motor carriers, freight forwarders, and brokers all still have to register. Also, intermodal equipment providers. So if you have, if you're a company that provides chassis or containers, also if you plan on registering for your hazmat safety permit, you go through the same system. And cargo tank facilities. The one thing that is completely different coming forward is exempt carriers, being that if you are hauling exempt products, now those are your farmers, or if you're a carrier picking up from a farm, you may have in the past just dealt with a simplified version of this, will now fall under the same umbrella as everyone else. Exempt carriers or brokers, freight forwarders, exempt, now have to post a BOC3 or your process agents, whereas before that was only reserved for carriers, brokers, and freight forwarders that dealt with non-exempt commodities. Now that's huge. That's a huge step in the right direction if you've been raked over the coals, we'll say, in a transaction involving exempt commodities. But right now, they're not required to post a bond into the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration system. So now they're registered. Now, FMCSA, Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, the safety administration throws a lot of people off, because what does registering brokers, what does registering exempt carriers and exempt commodities have to do with safety? Part of the safety aspect of that is to make sure that all of the parties involved in any freight transaction are financially stable enough to make sure that safety requirements can be met. Carriers, which most of my listeners are carriers, so I'm going to focus on that aspect, but carriers tend to look at FMCSA's regulation of brokers and their bond. If a broker does not pay a carrier for whatever reason, the carrier can file against their posted bond. That ensures that the broker will pay the carrier so that the carrier can continue to operate safely and maintain their equipment and so forth. So that's the way of thinking on the safety aspect of why this FMCSA gets involved in all of these small aspects and somewhat micromanages these businesses. For those of us that are taking advantage of that side of it, that's a good thing. As any good government agency knows how to do, they like to add red tape. And I believe that although their statement and their claim is this unified registration system is to simplify the process, I expect a lot more red tape coming up in the coming months. If you have any questions or comments about that, press 1. We already have questions on the line. I'm going to let a few more get in line here before I start taking the calls. I want to talk a little bit about just the pros and cons of this new system. The pros, as I just mentioned, it's supposed to be simplified, but on my notes here, I put a giant question mark to that word, simplified. They have not yet released form or the format for exactly how this will operate. To my knowledge, there's no beta testing going on. There may be in a small scale, but I try to keep on top of these things, and I haven't heard anything about it. I've talked to some attorneys at Hank Seaton's office. They don't see any major testing going on with this system. They haven't even seen the form. And their attorneys that have offices in Washington, D.C., and they go to the FMCSA office every day, They don't know what's happening yet because FMCSA has not released anything yet. So, simplified, big question mark. The way that they expect it to be simplified and the reason that I think it'll be more difficult is they claim that they will simplify the process by making it a one-form procedure. No matter what you do, you will fill out this one form. The MCS 150 that we've all filled out to get a DOT number and that you continue to fill out if you're a carrier biannually is gone. Crumble that up and throw it in the circular file. It's gone. It's trash. We will never use that again. The OP1, which is the form that you would file to get your MC number and your operating authority, that's trash. Throw that in the bin right alongside the MCS 150. Trash. We no longer use those. Neither of those forms. Those forms were 2 pages. I believe MCS 150 was 3 pages long. And I've said from the beginning, I could sit down and fill out both of those forms for anybody that happened to call me. I've talked people through it over the telephone. I filled them out online myself. 10 minutes tops. And I could get anyone their DOT number and MC number within 10 minutes, numbers issued, ready to go. Because it's a total of about 5 pages with both of those forms combined. Those are gone. And welcome MCSA-1, the MCSA-1. That will be the new form. That form will go into effect October 23rd, 2015, the MCSA-1 form. Now, there are a few examples of this form online. There's been a few that have been released, and there's been versions of it that have been used in the past. But current version, and the version that we will start using on October 3rd, I have not yet seen a copy of. It's expected to be no less than 25 pages long, possibly up to 40 pages long, depending on how many different little tiny details they try to squeeze into it. They may try to put it online, just like the MCS 150 and the OP1 currently are. They may try to put that online, which means you'll be scrolling through pages and pages and pages of who knows what, because they haven't released the form. Hopefully, there will be some drop-down menus and some quick links and a few shortcuts that we can take, but we don't know. The problem with that is, as simple as the current forms are, still a lot of little hiccups in the system. I get calls all the time asking me, well, why did it ask for a credit card number, and why did I get halfway through the form and it booted me back out? Well, because you clicked the wrong button here, or you selected the wrong link here, or it's not a perfect streamlined system yet, the way it currently is. October 23rd, they're throwing a whole new form in front of us. What shall we do? So one form, simplified, big question mark. Another pro that they claim is it's going to squeeze all of these entities in under one system, and they're going to do away with the MC number. I've mentioned that before. The MC numbers are going away next month. October 23rd, the MC numbers are gone. Say goodbye to those. So over the past year since I've been doing this show, I've dozens of phone calls and answered dozens of emails about people asking me, should I buy out this other carrier's authority because they have a lower MC number than I do? And brokers will work with me because they have a lower number and it shows that I'm a newer carrier and they will work with me. Throw that out. That whole idea, throw it away. Garbage. All of these other entities now that have a DOT number, or if they're in some kind of a situation where they have not registered with FMCSA at all, they're now going to file, and they're going to get a U.S. DOT number. And if you paid a lot of money for someone else's MC number because it was a lower number, guess what? There's no way to distinguish you from anyone else. No MC number. Simplified, big question mark. DOT number only. If you've ever looked at an MC number, at the end, if you're a freight forwarder, it'll be MC number dash FF to signify it's a freight forwarder. Same with a carrier. It'll be your number dash C for a carrier. A broker is number dash B for broker. Fairly easy to determine. You can look all these files up quickly and easily online on the SAFER system or through the FMCSA portal. You can quickly look up anybody with these numbers. You can tell exactly what they are and how they operate in their realm of business. There's no distinguishing factor on a DOT number. There's no dash C, no dash B, nothing. And now cargo tank facilities, hazmat, your intermodal carriers, all of those will somehow have to be identified by a DOT number because there are no other numbers anymore. So you've had carriers that may have been in business for decades but never needed to get never needed an MC number. Had they had an MC number, it may have been just one digit for all we know. That's how old it was. But guess what? Now, that doesn't matter. Throw that away. DOT number only. There's no way to distinguish the age either. You don't know who they are, how long they've been in business, nothing unless you look up the file, which is not a big deal. I've been telling people for a long time that didn't matter, but now it really doesn't matter because it's all going away. DOT number only, simplified, big question mark. They claim it should reduce the cost of compliance. Explain that to me again. I've been sitting here for the past couple hours scratching my head. How is this going to reduce the cost of compliance? You go from a simple five-page form to all of a sudden now you have a 40 possibly page form. Who knows? How is that supposed to be simple? They also say it'll be improved accountability. Okay, sounds more complicated to me. Accountability usually relies on a simple system. Doesn't sound very simple to me. So, reducing costs and improving accountability, I don't know. I think that's another big question mark. Remains to be seen. So we will see. Now, I understand a little bit of the concept. If everybody just has one number that you identify with, simply type that one number into the FMCSA system, and there you go. That's all of their information. Already today, a carrier, any carrier, can be identified by either the DOT number or the MC number. They're redundant systems. But, again, we're throwing in a whole new group to this file with all of these new numbers. So I could see how once it's fully implemented, maybe, possibly, it could streamline things slightly. But that remains to be seen. Big question mark. Covering all of those entities, all of those different business models, all of those different, I can't even imagine how this is going to work. How is this going to be simple? Those of us that have been doing it for a long time understand the system, understand the concept, we understand the red tape, but now we're throwing in these farmers maybe and these freight forwarders, these brokers, exempt commodity haulers that have never dealt with this, they've never needed to, and now they're going to be in the system as well. I don't know if any of you have ever called FMCSA, but if you call during business hours, typically you get a message saying that you're about 25 or 30 in line and press 1 and they'll call you back. You can wait or you can press 1. Either way, it'll be about an hour or more before you talk to someone. That's what the system we have now. What happens when you throw this new system in? To my knowledge, FMCSA has not hired any new phone answering personnel because really that's all they are. They don't know how to do anything but answer the phone and get your number and then tell you to write a letter or call someone else. They answer the phones and it takes you an hour or more to get in with them most of the time. So big question mark on that one. Now, I've already touched on the cons. I've got these separated, but, you know, the cons, let's just break those down. Number one, it's not ready yet. We're only a little over a month out, and they have not revealed this system yet. That's huge. All of us will become beta testers. Now, I need to clarify something. If you're getting your authority now, you have to go If you're getting your authority from October 23rd or beyond, you'll have to go through the system. But the rest of us that have our authority that must do our biannual updates also have to go through this system. It's not ready yet. So next time you have to update your file, good luck, because it's not ready yet. There will be a rollout process. So far, there's no delays on dates. There's no hints about how they'll roll it out, but this is a huge new system that they're just putting online on October 23rd. So by default, there will have to be a rollout process, and that may mean they put it in full gear right off the bat, and they just fix the failures as they happen. Hopefully, they somehow throttle it back and bring it online slow enough that they can keep too many errors from happening right off the bat. Should reduce the cost of the compliance. And, you know, under that category, I put fees for registration are expected to increase. They expect to save money on their end by somehow streamlining this into a one form system, however this works. They're streamlining it to save money on their end, which is what I believe they say when they say it should reduce the cost of compliance. I think they mean it may reduce cost of compliance on their end because they expect to increase rates, and they've not yet said how much. Currently, there's no cost to do your biannual updates, but that may change in the future. So be advised that if you plan on or if you have your update coming up in the next few months, you should do it as soon as possible. Do not delay. Now, I want to take a few phone calls, and I want to get into some of the enforcement issues with this whole process, because that's really where this is going to make the difference. But let's jump over to Jayburn in California. Welcome to the show.
Kenny, bright and glorious afternoon. How are you, my friend?
Fantastic. How can I help you?
Hey, listen, I know there's a lot of changes coming in, but hey, let's embrace this. And I know with all my heart that whatever happens, you're going to figure it all out. We're going to listen to your show, and everything's going to be just fine. I have no doubt that everything's going to be cool. Congratulations on your 1 year. Oh, I do. I've learned a lot from you, and I look at how much you're charging for all this information, and I got to tell you, man, you're an amazing educator. I'm really grateful for you and the time that your wife put into that. So, listen, I've got a business plan. I just kind of want to throw it at you a little bit. Tell me what you think about it.
Okay.
I've been driving now for 27 months, and I've decided that I want to own a truck. So I put the truck in my mind at that's my goal. So I've gone through all the different things. I've looked at lease programs. I looked at, are we allowed to talk about companies if I do it kind of quickly and indirectly? I'll do it. It's not bad. I looked at JCT, and what attracted me to that was that they can keep their truck. They work for 5 years, and at the end, they give them a buck, and they own the truck. Keep in mind that the truck at the end of the goal is what I'm looking for. But what I refined after thinking about it and looking at it from all different kind of angles, we're blessed in this occupation to have a lot of time to thinking, you know. And I've decided that my next job that I get needs to make $80,000 a year or more. And I'll tell you what I've come up with. If I make $80,000 or more a year, Kenny, I can put $500 a week away, and it's going to take just over 5.7 years. We'll call it six. But I'll have $150,000 cash to go out and buy a brand new truck. So this is what I've decided to do. First, I've got to get the $80,000 job, and they're out there, by the way. And then I'm going to go, and I can live the way I live. I can make my house payment. We can feed the family, and have my wife can have some money. But I have to put $500 away a week, still maintain what I'm doing, and in 5.7 years, I'll have $150,000, which in that time, I would have learned the ins and outs of everything. So do you like that?
I do like that. And, you know, you're setting the bar high. I will give you that. But those $80,000 jobs are out there. So if you can find it, you know, kudos to you. And I'm sure it sounds like you're doing your research. So that is an excellent plan. Now, I don't know that I would suggest going out and buying a brand new $150,000 truck. You do take a lot of you do take a big hit, just like buying anything else. As soon as you drive it off the lot, it loses a lot of value. So, but that's up to you. But I do think that your business plan, your idea of saving up the money and doing it that way is the way to go. That's definitely
awesome.
A much better way to go than most folks go.
Okay. This kind of segues into my second. It's more of a question. Thank you for taking the time to listen. I really appreciate it.
That's what I do.
I went to the, you know, part of making my dreams come to fruition is I have to dream. So I went to the Rush Freightliner dealer, the Rush Peterbilt dealer in Fontana, California, and I jumped up into them one, those big square front, I think what, 379s with the 18-speed, 550 horsepower. What a beautiful piece of machinery. Oh, my goodness, I loved it, right? Well, this gets me excited about it. So here's the deal. When I was talking to your lovely wife, who's just a sweetheart, by the way, I was trying to figure out, I'm real good with reefer stuff because that's what I do. I'm a dedicated Walmart driver. I drive from Riverside to Vegas every day and bring Walmart all their food. So I got the van stuff pretty much figured out. Of course,
okay,
there's always things you can learn, but I got that. But what I'm thinking, you mentioned that you come from a flatbed background. My question is, in order to be well-rounded and before I make that big investment on a truck, I should know pretty much as I can about everything. And I don't know anything about tarping. I don't know anything about chaining. Could you tell me, if I Google, how can I look this up to put in applications, maybe pursue some flatbed work for a couple of years, and then at the end of that I'll be able to make a good, solid decision on what I like and where I'm at then. Can you help me with that, please?
Well, that's a good question. Here's the thing. Learning how to chain and to tarp, there's the by-the-book way, which after you've done it for about a week, is not the way you will do it anymore. It's a learned practice, and I don't know that anybody does it the exact same way. I've seen a lot of different tips and tricks and techniques, and you know, I've got my way of doing it, and other flatbedders, I'm sure, have their way of doing it. There's the right way, there's your way, there's, you know, the customer's way. What I would suggest, if you really want to do flatbed, is get in with a, and you do van now, I would get in with a company that does both their training, and most of the carriers have some sort of criteria that you have to meet to really get into their flatbed division. So what they'll do is they will, first they'll send you to their load securement class. They'll teach you how to tarp. They'll teach you how to, you know, the rules and all that for how to chain things down and strap things down and all that, and the you know, the DOT regulations on how it needs to be done, and then always exceed that. And then they'll put you on the road, and you'll do a few loads, and you'll do general, typically, I don't want to say easy, but it's fairly, you know, the easier stuff. And you'll do that for a number of weeks or months, whatever their criteria is, before they let you start getting into the heavy haul or the oversize or anything like that. And that's where really where you get your feet wet. It's not rocket science to, you know, to secure everything and tarp everything, but there are better ways to do it than, certainly I'm sure you've seen the trucks going down the road and the tarps flapping all over or chains dangling or, you know, that kind of stuff drives me insane. But there are ways, good ways to do it, and I think if you could find some type of a mentor, if you can get in with one of these companies and find somebody that's really good at it that can teach you their tricks, so to speak, that would be probably the best way to go. Flatbedding and any platform work, and I didn't do so much the flatbedding as I did low boy type work, and I was chaining down, you know, bulldozers and things like that, so it wasn't so much of the tarping, but I learned the most, and I was doing that when I was 18, 19, 20 years old, okay, so I learned the most from the guys that have been doing it for 30 years, and typically, that segment of the industry doesn't have quite as many, I don't know how to put this, because this is backwards, but doesn't have quite as many of the super truckers when it comes to how to actually do that part of the job. And granted, typically that segment tends to have the most super truckers when it comes to the lunch counter talk. I'm not going to lie, but they do know what they're doing. So if you can get in with somebody that's been doing it a long time with some experience that can take you under their wing and teach you. Now, if that means going to working for that company, or if you don't want to take the leap to work for them, maybe they can teach you, you know, on the side somehow.
Okay.
But learn it by the book. Learn the basic DOT regulations first. Like I said, if a carrier can send you through their load securement class, that would be the best way to get started and get your feet wet. But learn how the old pros do it, because there are much easier ways than they're going to show you in those classes.
That's awesome, Kenny. I've had experience with I can drive grade alls and the construction forklifts. I can drive tractors. I haven't drove, like, combines and everything, but I've had quite a bit of experience from doing farming when I used to spend summers in Carolina. So I know my way around a tractor and stuff, which should be helpful. Heavy equipment is something that really interests me. So, yeah, I guess getting a good teacher is the best thing in the end. Kenny, I won't take any more of your time. Continued success. I'll look forward to listening to the rest of your programs on my podcast. God bless you and your family.
Thank you, Jay Bird, and thanks for the call. We'll jump over to John in Ohio.
Hey, Kenny, how you doing tonight?
Fantastic. How can I help you?
Congratulations on the 1-year anniversary, by the way, to you and Elizabeth.
Thank you.
My question for you tonight is, if you are a carrier and you're leasing on some people and you have a little bit of an issue with getting paid by brokers, is there a certain time frame in which you have to pay the people that are leased on to you? Are you obligated by law or by regulation to pay them within a certain period of time, or can you just pay them when you get paid by the brokers?
Yes, you do have a law, a regulation. It's in the Truth in Leasing Regulations with FMCSA. They have a whole section on it. And you have 15 days from the time that they submit their paperwork. So
Okay. Whatever
paperwork is required for your billing, so if it's bill of lading, you know, if there's rate confirmations or, you know, some type of proof of delivery, and whatever that you need for billing, when they submit that to you, you have 15 days to pay them. There are ambulance chasing attorneys in this industry that look for carriers that have owner operators leased on and things, and they look for that first. That's their number one thing that they shoot for, is they look for bad contracts, carrier and the owner operator, and that item right there is the first thing that happens, because most small companies, one or two trucks, and they bring on an owner operator, have that problem, the cash flow issue. And you can almost pinpoint it when you start talking to an owner operator about it, because the first thing they'll say is, they will let me run under their numbers as if it was my own. To me, that means the carrier is not paying them on time. And almost every time, that's exactly what it means. It means that the carrier waits until they get paid and they pass the money through. And you just can't do that.
Right.
And an attorney that catches wind of it will jump all over it, and you will have to pay fines and fees and, you know, the interest and back charges and all that kind of stuff. And it's just not worth the headache. If you're having cash flow issues, and you said it's with brokers, I would seriously consider
come around. I actually started doing it myself, and I said, I'm going to go on that again. If it's a matter of paying your employees or owner operators, then you have to accept it. You know, it's an expensive situation. I mean, in fact, the quick pay fee is expensive, but that's the responsibility that you have to your employees. So, to me, it really doesn't matter. And if that's the case, you fulfill your obligation, that's what you need.
Okay. Are you still there, John?
Yep.
We seem to be having some technical difficulties.
You're back now. I couldn't hear you for a little bit.
Am I back now?
Okay. I can hear you loud and clear now.
I don't know where. That's where I was. If you have to do some type of background check to make sure that your contractor is employed, you can take the hit on your test.
Seem to be having some major issues tonight with the sound. We'll see if we can fix this.
Now I can hear you again.
Got it. Okay. Three. Okay, I was saying that if you need to do factoring or quick pay options to make sure that your employees and contractors get paid, then that is the hit that you need to take to make sure, because your employees and contractors should be first and foremost your number one priority, no matter what it takes. And
so
yes, that's an expensive option.
So if the carrier is doing the quick pay option, he doesn't pass that expense along to the person that's leased on to the company.
You could pass that on, but I would not pass it on as a quick pay fee. It's your obligation to pay them. You could pass that on as, you know, various processing fees and so forth. In my opinion, this is just opinion. I know carriers that do pass that on. In my opinion, it's not the owner-operators, I guess you would say, if the carrier doesn't have the financial resources to make sure that they get paid. So it shouldn't really fall on their shoulders to have that. That being said,
right,
you're working for them in a way. Now, I mean, they're paying you. That percentage comes out of that nut. So you can add to that to cover your costs, of course. It's just a matter of how you pass it down. In my case, if I do any kind of fees like that, if there's any kind of fees that come up along the way, I always take that out of my share, just because I feel that is the service that I'm providing.
Right. Right. Okay.
So, but that's my opinion on that.
Right. So that can kind of go either way. It's how you feel as a business person, how you want to do business. Then there's no regulation
right
on that.
And this goes back to now. I've talked before about there are carriers that will let trucks lease on for 5% even. I've heard as low as 5% or 10%. But then what you find out when you read a little deeper, and that's another thing that those ambulance-chasing transportation attorneys jump on, is they look for that low percentage pass-through. They find out that they're passing through all of these extra costs that the owner-operator, by law, should not be forced to pay. You cannot force an owner-operator to buy any product or service through you. So
right,
if you're passing those costs on, it could be construed that you are forcing them to pay for something that they don't have a choice to buy it anywhere else. So it's a really sticky line, and that goes for passing through insurance costs, factoring fees, any cost. If you pass it through, it could be turned around. So you have to be really careful of how you do that and make sure that you set that precedent up front and put it in writing and in your contract so that it's understood from both parties on how it works. Because if somebody agrees to it, even if it's illegal, if they agree to waive that, they may still beat you in court, but your damages will be minimized at the very least. So make sure that I try to recommend everybody gets as much in writing as possible, because right or wrong, if it's in writing and somebody signs off and agrees to it, your damages will be minimized. So
right,
that's the best advice I can give you on that.
Okay.
And
thank you. I appreciate it, Kenny.
Absolutely, John, and thanks for the call. And certainly when it comes to contracts or owner-operators or anything of the sort, and you have questions regarding the rules and laws, I'm a radio guy. I've never claimed to be an expert. I've done this enough times to understand how the rules work, but by no means am I an attorney. I'm not an accountant or an attorney.
I try to pass through, to the best of my knowledge, what I've gathered from all these sources. I've done some research, but you have to do, if you really need the legal answer, I've given you my best opinion on it. Contact an attorney. I would definitely, as always, recommend transportationlaw.net. Hank Seaton and his crew over there are great guys, and they'll answer plenty of questions. We have a lot of calls lined up, and I will just keep blowing through them. I do have more to talk about the FMCSA and their enforcement of these new registrations. And let's jump to Lamar in North Carolina.
Good evening, Kenny. Thank you for taking my call. As you know, I recently got my authority, and I have come up against some issues that seem a bit frustrating, and that is permits. I've talked to OIDA, I've talked to NASTIC, I've talked to a couple of different organizations, and it seems no one gives me the straight answer, or at least one answer, about what states I need individual permits from or anything of that nature. Obviously, I know the Kentucky, the New York, the Oregon, the New Mexico, but aside from that, I don't know much else, and I don't really know exactly who to turn to on that. Can you shed any light on that, number one? And number two, you have me a little bit concerned about these new registration laws coming up, because that was that MF-150 or MC-150 or whatever, to update that biannually, then what the heck are we going to be able to do?
Well, and the reason I'm doing the show, and that was my main topic tonight, is everybody seems to be a little concerned, and there are no real good answers. But FMCSA is rolling it out whether we like it or not. So we have to just be prepared for what's coming, and they haven't even released what's coming yet. So it's hard to say exactly how it will roll out. And one thing that I am sure of, it's already pretty common for new entrants to go and have a third party file all of their paperwork for them. You can bet that these third parties are going to take huge advantage of the new rules coming out. They're going to, you know, push as hard as they can to tell you that you can no longer do it without them. They already do that. If you get on the phone or you take one of these postcards from one of these third parties companies that offer to get your MC number in 10 minutes and all that stuff, they already are a scam. I've mentioned it before. They are going to be all over this. So it'll be a moneymaker for them. And I can say that, and I know you've already gone through the system, but anybody that's listening that's on the fence, if you want to get your authority now, if you're certain of it, I would go ahead and file before that October 31st deadline and get the ball rolling on the whole process. That said, anybody listening that's not sure or has any reason why they wouldn't do it before October 31st anyhow, do not jump the gun on this, because this could be huge. I see way too many carriers that start not really understanding what they're getting into. So now, your other part of the question, what permits do you need in what states? Like you said, New York, New Mexico, Kentucky, and Oregon have those are the use tax permits. I've mentioned before that New Jersey is probably the number one with enforcement. And if you're incorporated, and this really only applies if you're incorporated, you should go through the system and the process if you're a sole proprietor or an LLC. But right now, they're only really enforcing it hardest on corporations. You have to file as a foreign entity within the state of New Jersey. Same with Pennsylvania. If you pick up or deliver, it has nothing to do with intrastate. This is pick up or deliver in those states. Now, almost every state has some type of permit or regulation about that, and that's why OIDA and NASTIC are so vague on it, because very few people apply for all of the required permits. I can guarantee you that I can log in and look at the permits that even some of the major carriers have, and they're probably not even registered with every state. So I'll tell you the big ones that you need to watch out for. Illinois for intrastate. If you're doing any work, pick up and deliver within that state. Illinois, this is another one. Now, I recommend that Texas, I don't care if you do one load a year there. It takes 10 days to get registered in the state of Texas. It's a simple process, but Texas is so big that if you're doing over-the-road type work, on, especially on the spot market, if you land in Texas, chances are you will have an opportunity to take an intrastate Texas load. So Texas is one that you absolutely should. If you run California, okay, California is another one that you definitely should. Now, some of the Midwest states, if you do a lot of work in there, Iowa, Kansas, Nebraska, those I've heard crack down quite a bit on enforcement with intrastate work. Outside of that, now, again, every state has some type of formalities that you're supposed to follow, but outside of those that I just listed, unless you do a substantial amount of work in those states, I would take it on a load-by-load basis and see where you go. Now, the three states that, as far as I know, don't have any registration, these are the only three that don't have any real requirement. It's Arizona, Tennessee, and Florida. Every other state has something that they want you to register for, but only those few that I listed really have an enforcement program in place.
Huh. Now, can most of that be done online, or do I have to go to each state Department of Transportation?
You do have to go to each state. Most of it can be done online. There are fees with most of it, unfortunately. Texas, I believe, to register the first time is $200, and I don't remember the fees for some of the others, but again, Texas is probably top on my list just because of the size of the state. Illinois and California, those three for intrastate are on the top of my list just because of their enforcement and the size of the states. New Jersey and Pennsylvania, because they will literally, New Jersey especially, will impound your truck until not only this year's taxes are paid, but any previous year's taxes are paid. They did at one time have a phase-in program and an amnesty program where if you didn't have, there was a minimal fee you had to pay, and I think that is over now. So register with them if you do any work up there. And this is why that, oh, why the NASTIC are so vague on it, because there's not much more I can tell you about it. You really have to go to each state as you go through. We'll say that the front cover of your Rand McNally Atlas has most of the phone numbers that you need to contact the individual states if you need to.
Okay. Okay. Well, that helps. It's still frustrating, but that helps. So.
Well, I appreciate the call. It is frustrating. So, but good luck, and I'm sure you'll get it. Most of us, you know, we've stuck it out, and we've managed. I'm sure you'll manage too.
Thank you, Kenny. Have a good night.
You too. Thanks for the call. Jump to Sean in West Virginia. Sean, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Kenny. Thank you for taking the call, and thanks for bringing us all together here and working through some of these things. Now, the question I had was with this unified registration that they're doing. Is this going to take place, the unified carrier registration already in play here?
No.
That Indiana takes care of?
Negative. No on that. The unified registration system is separate from the unified carrier registration. It's a completely separate issue. Unified registration is only with registration in regards to FMCSA. It takes place of your USDOT number and your MC number registration. It only takes the place of those. Unified Carrier Registration, the UCR, that we've all been paying forever out of Indiana, it takes the federal information and spreads it out amongst the states. It's a completely separate, that's a state-run program, and it is completely separate from the FMCSA. So, no, it does not take the place of it, and it still exists after this act.
Well, it seems like they already have that in place. I don't know why they couldn't have implemented or taken the data from that and used it for whatever purpose that they're coming up with this new one. But currently have a Pennsylvania intrastate, and if I have the UCR paid, I do not have to pay the intrastate fee. So that's why
correct.
I was kind of wondering.
In some states, that is true.
Yeah, that's why I was wondering if that was going to do away with that. So in one aspect, that's good. You know, that'll take care of both of those with that one payment. Now, what about the, and I understand what they're trying to do here as far as get everybody a DOT number, but we have the National Motor Freight Transportation. I'm not sure what their number is there, but it's the SCAC number.
Right. Standard Carrier Alpha Code, yes.
Yes, now that brings in, you know, the shipping containers and those out overseas and that don't have the DOT numbers. Now, are they going to do something with that? I mean, how are they going to be able to determine who these Chinese companies are?
Again, that's a completely separate system. That the National Motor Freight Traffic Association, I don't know if I got that right, but that is an independent, completely independent, not state or federal run organization. They have some ties and they've got some lobby groups within the other groups, but they are completely independent. They run that standard carrier alpha code system to, like you said, monitor and track all of the overseas shipments, and mainly it's for import-export business, but it has absolutely nothing to do with FMCSA. Completely independent. You'll still need that one. You'll still need your SCAC code. You'll still need to register with the Unified – I'm getting them mixed up myself now. The UCR, Unified Carrier Registration, which is run by the state of Indiana, still need to register with both of those because they are independent. And you will also need to register with the Unified Registration System. Now, where there might be some confusion is you already have to register with the three separate organizations. Right now, you register with the MCS 150 and the OP1. They're just doing away with those forms, replacing it with this new form, and that will be the Unified Registration System.
Well, I mean, it's no real surprise to me, without getting all political, that there's so much redundancy and all that. But like I said, any one of those systems would, you know, replace the whole bunch of them.
Absolutely, and really, though, they all piggyback off of each other in a way. They're not really so much redundant as they just help each other out. Now, what the UCR is supposed to do is you register with the federal government, but in order for all of the states to have the infrastructure to read the federal government's information, you pay Unified Carrier Registration. That used to be, you know, back before deregulation, the bingo cards, where you had to go and get just your card stamped with every state. But this is a completely different system, and it's just to transfer all the information and make sure that everybody's on the same page. But they just piggyback off of each other. But I completely understand what you mean, because when you pull into a weigh station or so forth, they pull up your file on FMCSA's website. They don't pull up a UCR website, but supposedly all of it is linked through the UCR system, and that's supposed to be how the interaction between the states and the federal government works. But they're not really the same system, and they're not really redundant systems, but they work hand-in-hand in their piggyback systems. Now, the SCAC code is completely separate. That's not even required. Nobody really needs that unless you do import-export, and that's just to track containers and trailers and trucks crossing the border or coming in and out of ports. And
well, I've been finding a lot of the carrier packets that I'm actually filling out, they're asking for that, and they don't want to do business with you unless you have it. And from what I understand, you can't get a government contract without it.
That's true.
And yet,
and the reason for that is the transportation management systems, the computer systems that all of these companies use, are tracking shipments literally all around the world. And so the only way to track, again, cross-border shipments is with that standard carrier alpha code. So if you're going to do business, even if you're not doing import-export type business, to be in their system, they want you to have that number, just because that's the number that their system uses. So it's not necessarily required by any type of law, but some customers do require it.
Well, then even with our MC numbers, they did away with the ICC. They haven't really changed the books, as far as I'm aware of, as far as tax. You know, they're asking for your MC number for your sales tax exemption.
Right. Now, exactly. Now, see, this is kind of a This is where that, you know, simplified with the big question mark comes up. How is that going to work? Because they do ask, the only way to prove that you're doing interstate commerce, which is how most of those taxes are waived, interstate commerce, they recognize an MC number because that signifies authority to operate interstate. A U.S. DOT number, by default, does not. So now I don't know how those companies will identify carriers and so forth that work on interstate commerce. So that's another tough one. You know, that,
I just called to help point
to
out the big mess
now,
that they're making.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, all of this, this actually has been in the works for decades, this unified registration system. I mean, there's been forms of it since deregulation. And the first phase was to do away with the ICC and establish FMCSA. But FMCSA all along has really had they've had the marching orders to implement this type of a system. And I guess everything they do has to go through Congress and so forth. So it's just taken this long to come around. And once this is implemented and it's up and running, I could see how it could actually be more simplified and an easier and streamlined process. The problem is the way that they seem to be going about the implementation may cause problems in and of itself. And it's going to take a long time to get the bugs worked out. And that's really what I was saying before. If you're on the fence, if you're fairly certain that you're going to get your authority, then now is the time and jump on it before the debacle happens, because wait times are expected to get longer. Right now it takes about 3 weeks to get approval, to get longer. Chances of paperwork issues will be, you know, exponential, you know, as far as problems go. And eventually costs will go up, although right off the bat it doesn't look like they will, but eventually costs will go up. So you should get ahead of it now if you are on the fence. I don't want to push anybody into it that isn't ready, but if you are ready and you've just been waiting for something, this might be what you're waiting for. So, Sean, thank you for the call. We're going to take another call here quick. We're getting close to the top of the hour. Eric in Missouri.
Hello.
Eric, thanks for the call. How can I help you?
Can you hear me okay?
Absolutely.
Okay. Great show, Kenny. Yeah, I was calling in about some of your earlier stuff, too. I mean, this is going to create such a huge mess. I mean, the paperwork alone, it's just insane. And it's going to, you know, it's really, I think it's really going to hurt a lot of drivers, you know, the owner-operators. And it's government overreach again, it just drives me crazy. Drives me crazy. But, you know, like you said, if it simplifies things, it might work. But if it's going to cost more money, more money out of the driver's company, out of his pocket, you know, it's just getting out of hand. It really is.
I agree. And I do think, and I've said it all along, FMCSA is the one agency that overall they got right. Now, if you have problems and you have to go through their red tape to get anything done, it's just as complicated as the rest. But to the simple part of just getting started as a motor carrier has been fairly easy up to this point. So they got that right. I think my opinion is once this is fully implemented and they get the bugs worked out, it may do what they say. It may be a simplified solution. They may have fixed a problem that didn't exist, but it may eventually work the way they say it will. And I can only hope that the transition goes smoothly.
When is this going to affect? You say October 31st of this year?
October 23rd. No, they wouldn't pick the end of the month or the beginning of the month. That's too complicated. We'll make it October 23rd. I think they threw a dart at the calendar.
Exactly. Well, you know, that's how government works, you know. Well, let's see if this sticks, you know. If it doesn't stick, tax it some more. Throw some fees or fines in there. But, yeah, it's just out of hand. You know, I mean, there's so many people, you know, owner-operators and company drivers, you know, they're just getting out of the business. And I do believe there is a driver shortage, and this isn't going to help any. It really isn't.
Yeah, and these regulations are going both ways. Some of them are designed to try to bring more drivers in. Some of them are they're not even taking that into account before they implement the whole system, and it's certainly driving good drivers away. It's upsetting a lot of people that are set in their ways, and then again, you know, it's a new age. We're 2015, it's time to move ahead. They don't make a lot of changes quickly, so when it's time to change, we have to be ready. It's government, and it'll be ugly, but, you know, changes are coming, and we have to embrace them as best we can. So I want to get to the enforcement issues on that, though, and this is something I know we're at the top of the hour, and I tend to start losing a few callers here, so I do want to get a couple of the enforcement issues out, but Eric, I will leave you on the line.
Okay.
Starting, and this was actually started a couple of years ago, but in 2013, with the biannual updates that all carriers have to do and update your MCS 150, starting after this implementation, there will be a zero tolerance of this. You have to register in the month that you're required, of the year that you're required. Failure to register will result, without fail, in revocation of your authority. One of the issues that this brings up is, this is the only form now to fill out. So if you don't have your PIN number for your DOT or MC number, your docket number, if you don't have the PIN number, which is required to fill out this form, it will be mailed to your last known address. The only way to update your last known address is to fill out this form. So this becomes a chicken before the egg problem. Make sure that you have your PIN number handy. If you don't, make sure that you request it before this goes into effect, or it may be a nightmare to try to get it. PIN number, and you can't register and update on time, plan on possible fines and revocation of your authority. So be very careful with that. Also, keep in mind that exempt carriers are now required to register for this. If you don't register, you will be fined and put out of business. You will be shut down. Again, it has to happen. October 3rd is when this goes into effect, but you have approximately 1 year to file your process agent. So all exempt carriers must file the process agents. And I had the date here, and I don't know where my notes went here, but you have about 1 year to get all of that filed, and I will make sure that I post all about this on the Trucking with Authority Facebook group. So if you are on Facebook, check us out there, Trucking with Authority. Join the group. I have some files listed. If you're getting your authority now or going through the process, there's a file in that section. You have to get to it from your actual computer. You can't get through it from a phone or anything, but there's a checklist on the step-by-step to go through the current forms. Go through those before this gets implemented and try to get this out of the way if you're on the fence. Extremely careful on how you proceed going forward. I believe, and I talk quite a bit about scams, I believe that this is going to open up a huge gateway for more scam artists to come in. I already mentioned the third parties that will be trying to work their way in to do the filings, but I expect that now those same third parties that blew up your phone when you were trying to register for authority are now going to blow up your phone to do your annual filing or biannual filing, and who knows what else they may try to squeeze in there. It's going to be a nightmare, so be extremely careful with that. We're going to jump to Carlos in Florida quick before we finish up the call. And Eric, you still are on the line if you had anything else you wanted to add.
No, I'm still here. Did you want me to hang out for a while? Or?
Sure. Carlos, go ahead.
Yes, I have a question. I was leased to a carrier. And in Florida, when I got my EIN and everything, that they gave me a lease registrant DOT number, which was required. And I'm wondering, one, I don't think it's active. So can that be reactive to help start getting my operator authority on that same current number? Or do I have to start the whole process over and get a new DOT number and everything to have operating authority?
This is an easy one. No, that DOT number is yours and only yours. It's assigned to you. It never changes, never expires. It's yours, and there's no, you know, being active or inactive with a DOT number. Now, I assume you were leased to a carrier. Did he ask you to get your own IFTA or get your own IRP plate, or what was the reason to get your own DOT number?
My own plate. That's what it was, pretty much what it was.
Exactly. And, no, it never really expires. It's assigned to you. You can file to get your authority, and your currently you will get an MC number, and your operating authority will go active, and your MC number, which you no longer have – you already have a DOT number in place, so that would be the MCS-150. You've already filled that out. All you need to do is fill out the OP-1 currently, and that's the application for authority. Again, check out my – checklist on Trucking with Authority on Facebook.
Right. I'm in it. I'm in there.
And, okay, and you should be good to go.
Okay.
It's under the files section. You'll find that checklist.
Okay, because I plan on my authority in April. So I didn't know, because I had it for the longest. Well, I don't know what it is. I haven't really used it except that one time, and it's just sitting there. I pretty much first say, you know, it's just sitting in the dock, up in the attic, you know. And I wanted to make sure if I had to redo everything over again, or if that is tied in, and pretty much like I'm like partially in or not, or the whole situation. So I sure appreciate that.
Well, thank you for the call, and I'm sure that if you follow that checklist, that will get you through the whole system. Now, we're just a little past the top of the hour. I want to thank all of you for your support. Go ahead and check us out again. I want to plug our Facebook page at Facebook.com/Trucking Authority. The rest of our shows, you can check out the recordings on letstruck.com. You'll find all of our shows in the show list, times, and phone numbers there. Letstruck.com. Tomorrow, check out Rico Muhammad with Rates and Lane, 7 p.m., phone number 347-677-1799. Fridays at 4 in the afternoon, get with Kim at Destination Health, phone number 347-324-3285. Mike and Kevin Beckett, Sunday nights at 9, 347-637-1067. You've been listening to Trucking with Authority. If you're listening to us on the recording, you can catch us live on Tuesday nights at 7 p.m. Call 646-668-2277. 1 year in the books. Thank you all so much for your support. It's been fantastic. We look forward to the coming year, and we look forward to all these changes because, hey, as Jay Bird said, let's just embrace the changes. They're coming. Let's just be ahead of the curve and be ready for them. Until next week, drive safe, everyone. Stay profitable, and good luck in your journeys.